Hello, and welcome to the Enlightened Awakening Podcast,
a place of honest and authentic conversations.
I'm your host, Timmy.
And I'm Uriel.
And today we bring in the second edition of Freestyle Friday, where we just chat about whatever's been popping around in the news, whatever's on our minds, and kind of just see where it goes. So, as I'm sure some of you would have heard, the Supreme Court in the United States struck down the affirmative action initiative and essentially said that it violated civil rights laws and that it gave preferential treatment that was undue. For anyone who isn't aware of how affirmative action worked, particularly when it came to higher education, essentially minorities were in some cases given preferential treatment over other groups that were considered overrepresented, particularly at Ivy League schools such as Harvard. And what they would do then in the admissions office is take into account some factors, including race, as well as, of course, grades when they were actually deciding who was going to get admitted or not. There was a group of Asian American students who filed a civil rights case that ultimately ended up in the Supreme Court, and the justices voted 6-3 to strike down affirmative action as it pertains to higher education. And so today I wanted to bring this to this forum here to kind of see, Uriel, what your thoughts were. Is this something that you knew was a practice in the States before this news came to light? Is that something that you agree with in terms of getting rid of that? Do you think that it has its place? It has its benefits? Let's hear it.
I think it's a very interesting choice that they made to strike down on this. The way that I kind of think about it is you would think that race shouldn't necessarily have any power over who may get admitted to any given institution or any given program. As long as you meet the requirements, then the competition is on race, whoever has the greatest credentials. I'm of the opinion that maybe you should get that position. But I think on the flip side of it as well is I think we have to not be so simplistic in our views and understand that, unfortunately, there are certain ethnicities that don't have the social economic status to be able to develop themselves or have the opportunities that other ethnicities have had. I think that initially that is probably why some of these initiatives were started. And it's very obvious that the diversification of campuses is incredibly beneficiary to everybody involved, because you don't want to segregate anybody because of their ethnicity or their lack of opportunities. I don't know that I agree with that. I mean, here in Canada, the Indigenous people and communities also have opportunities in post-secondary institutions. And I kind of agree with that. I think that they face a lot more difficulties in their communities than some of us do. And if their choice is to pursue post-secondary education, we should give them that opportunity when basically the odds are stacked against them. But I don't think it really hurts to help those people that really aspire to do things but don't necessarily have the opportunity to do so.
When I first heard about this, that's where my mind went as well, is the parallel to the Indigenous population here in Canada. Most people would agree that those sorts of initiatives are not only beneficial, but to some degree necessary. And the reason for that is that there was a systemic effort to marginalize and suppress a group of people for a prolonged period of time that the government played an active and significant role in. In fact, they were the ones leading out in this. And because of that, there's all sorts of consequences that this group of individuals, this group as a whole, is now experiencing. For me, I was stunned when I learned that the last residential school didn't close until the early 1990s. But what was also really interesting to me as I read a little bit more about this case is Justice Clarence Thomas, who is one of the Republican appointed judges on the Supreme Court, he actually was the chairman of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And in 1983, I think it was, he was talking about how he had actually benefited from the initiatives that this commission really pushed for. And there was this one quote that I came across that was just very interesting to me. "God only knows where I would be today," and then proceeded to say, "if it wasn't for the legal principles of equal employment opportunity measures, specifically affirmative action." And he even said that it was critical to minorities and women in this society. So, of course, fast forward 4 decades, the man is now on the Supreme Court and this issue comes up and he votes to actually strike it down. But it's just interesting to me how those who benefited from an identification that not all groups have equal access to certain spaces then turned around and slammed that door in the face of others. Another thing that stuck out to me as I was doing a little bit more reading into this situation is that there's a Boston-based nonprofit called Lawyers for Civil Rights that actually today filed a complaint against Harvard University specifically for their legacy admission policy, which gives preferential admission consideration to family members and particularly children of donors and alumni of Harvard. And it's interesting because it's essentially the same, if you think about it, in terms of getting preferential treatment based on being part of a specific group. And so anyways, they filed this challenge that likely, I think, will probably end up in the Supreme Court. It'll be interesting to kind of see what the response is or what the thought and the conversation around this is when it gets up to that level.
You'd always hope for a positive outcome that will obviously mean more opportunities for everybody. But it's hard to say when you get into politics. There's so many intangibles. A topic that I think a lot of us don't necessarily think about. It's just the concept of like equality versus equity. I think equality is incredibly important. But although both of them can work together, both of those concepts, and can complement each other in different scenarios, I think in order to provide people with fair opportunities at all stages in their life, I think we need to approach everything in more of an equitable stance, or to take a more equitable stance. And the reason being is that when you look at equality, it's really all about treating everyone the same and giving everybody the same opportunities and access, whether it be to resources or even rights itself. But it's not necessarily looking at the varying degrees of difficulties that any given individual may be facing. Versus equity, it really focuses on recognizing that every individual person has different needs, and that can be due to where they started out or even just their life circumstances. So when we focus on distributing resources available to us and opportunities in a way that accounts for these differences, you tend to provide a more fair opportunity across the board. I remember when I was in school, there was an image where it was 3 boys and they were all trying to watch a baseball game through a fence, but all 3 boys weren't the same height. And so they showed a picture of equality where they gave all 3 boys the same, like 1 box each to stand on to be able to see the game. And one of them, who was the tallest, got to see the game perfectly with just 1 box. The shortest kid couldn't even see over the fence. The 3rd boy could barely see over the fence. And so then they showed the example of equity, and the tallest boy still had only 1 box. The shortest boy had 3 boxes, and the 3rd boy, which was kind of in a middle height, had 2 boxes. And then that really exemplified a more equitable distribution of resources to provide everybody with the same opportunity, taking into consideration all of those contributing factors that may be inhibiting their ability to access any given resource. So
that image, I think it's a really popular one that you see in a lot of different schools, because I also remember seeing that. I don't know if it was, I think it was actually in high school for me where I first saw that image. And it was powerful because it helped me understand the difference between the two, because at that time in my life, I didn't. And I think that it was from that spirit of equity that affirmative action was born. And ultimately speaking, there are many people who, including Clarence Thomas, there are many other people who have benefited from initiatives that were rooted in the spirit of equity. Although I do get where the other side is coming from, ultimately speaking, it could be extremely frustrating to be very qualified in terms of your merits, in terms of all of the work that you did in an extracurricular way to present yourself as the ideal candidate for this prestigious institution, in this case, Harvard, and to be told that you didn't make it in, and that know that there are those who are less qualified on paper than you, I can imagine how frustrating that would be. I read a little bit of the opinion that the six judges, and I think it was actually the Chief Justice who penned the opinion as to why it is that they came to this decision. And it spoke specifically about the merits of the applicant being the primary factor that goes into consideration when it's being decided whether or not someone will be admitted. And legacy, admission, preference to me falls into the exact same category as affirmative action, though it's interesting that it's benefiting those who already had opportunities and resources afforded to them. It really does come down to, I think, not only political lines, but also race and how that plays into it too. Because as we know, most people who benefit from affirmative action are minorities who are underrepresented in the academic spaces.
It's really important to remember that at the end of the day, we are all just human beings and we all deserve to be treated as such. And sometimes we feel deserving of resources or opportunities, and we want to safeguard that because we feel almost as though it is like a given right in a way. But as an immigrant in a new country, I've also learned the importance of having to fight for those opportunities and having to earn those opportunities. So I still kind of fall under the belief that if we can make the world as equitable as possible and we try on a perfect world to put everybody at a same playing field, then it's fair game. Having that said, it's probably very unrealistic to think the world will become more equitable, because what we're truly seeing is not that. These affirmative actions need to continue to be put into place to protect those minorities until we're able to find a solution that can put everybody in the same playing field.
Something else that recently happened that I thought might be interesting to talk about, and I don't know if you had heard about this, but there was that paramilitary group that was supporting Russia in the invasion of Ukraine. I think they're called the Wagner Group, if I'm not mistaken. And while they had been a critical part of Russia's strategy in terms of this invasion, they recently staged a mutiny and essentially decided that they're not siding with Russia in this conflict anymore. From what I read, a lot of it is due to the fact that they felt they were being under-resourced and that they weren't being put in the best position to be able to participate effectively. And they also started having some casualties on their side because of that. And I've been loosely following the war in Ukraine the last little bit, especially now that it seems that it's coming to a bit of a turning point where Russia is starting to lose steam. So, of course, this was a pretty significant blow to them. But what has just been the most interesting thing to me about this whole mutiny piece is that it begs the question, how much further are things going to have to deteriorate before Putin decides that he's like, yeah, you know, maybe this isn't worth it? Of course, this all started in 2014 with Crimea and annexing that part of Ukraine that since then has unofficially, I guess, been a part of Russia. But I couldn't help but laugh when I heard about this because, of course, the leader had been openly criticizing Putin for some time, but to stage a full mutiny and there were also reports of like an armed rebellion, I'm like, man, what goes around comes around. What are your thoughts on that? Did you hear about this mutiny that the Wagner Group staged?
I have briefly heard about it. I'm not necessarily surprised because it appears as though Russia has been struggling a lot in regards to their war plans. And so when you hear that Ukraine is recovering territory and it appears as though they are doing much better than Russia, who was believed to be a force to be reckoned with, almost or very close to the United States, and are now essentially losing a war to Ukraine, who they thought they would essentially walk all over. I think it's like questioning a lot of the infrastructure and the leadership in that country. So I'm not necessarily surprised because, you know, they're starting to sort of question if this war is lost. And then we are now associated with them, there's going to be consequences that will be placed upon us. And so I think that they don't necessarily want to deal with that. I do still believe, though, that Russia has like a loaded gun with the amount of nuclear weapons they possess. Although I think the amount of eyes that have been placed on this war have kind of diminished as the war has continued on. I think it's still a very dangerous war. I think that, as we probably know, Putin appears to be a very strong leader in the sense that I don't think he would be afraid to initiate nuclear action. I may be wrong by this, but I believe that if maybe he is at a point where he might lose the war, or he might, his government might get overthrown. I'm not necessarily sure, like anything where even his own life is at risk, that something like that could happen. But we just have to hope that that doesn't end up being the case, because that would be, for all we know, the end of humanity. So I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, it's insane to think about, right? The prospect of nuclear war in this day and age. As you said, like, some people are just going to do whatever it takes to be able to hold on to power. And it's very clear that Russia, despite being way more armed and much better prepared going into this war, they seem to be taking L's at every turn. And of course, Ukraine is getting a whole lot of support in terms of finances and equipment from a lot of countries, particularly in Europe and then the United States and Canada as well. But it's is truly remarkable to see how well they have been doing. And so I could see a situation where at least the threat of nuclear warfare or even a nuclear attack could be leveraged. It's a terrifying thing to consider in this day and age. You would have hoped that we would have been done with that during the Cold War, but you know what they say, history repeats itself. I was seeing something today that Zelensky, the prime minister, was saying that no matter what, they're not going to consider this a victory unless they get Crimea back. And I can see why he's like, all right, while we're here, let's come back and take everything that was taken from us. And I think it's a pretty high goal to aim for him. I definitely commend him for trying to get that back 9 years later, but it'll be interesting to see how it ultimately plays out. But one of the other things that I've been reading a couple reports on is that potentially Putin doesn't have that same level of support within the inner circle that he once had. And that's not terribly surprising to me, because people like to rock with you when you're doing well, when you're on top. But it's human nature to pull away when you see that the ship is sinking.
Yeah, let's hope for the sake of humanity that this is the end of it. And maybe they surrender, give up the territory, and you can go back to what appeared to be more peaceful times.
I like how you said what appeared to be.
Well, I think, even though I think a lot of us are ignorant about it, there's a lot going on with like cyber warfare. It doesn't make the news because people just don't necessarily understand. And I mean, it's not for us to understand. There's a lot of pretty crazy theories out there that I'm sure we can speak about, but it's interesting.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode, guys. We really appreciate the continued support. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast wherever it is that you like to listen to podcasts, because we are actually out here on every single platform.
Thanks for listening.